You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show on the Choose Yourself Network. Today on the James Altucher Show.
At first, you thought you were just stupid or not as good as the other kids. Considering that you thought that about yourself, what did the other kids think about you?
I had a group of friends, and then one day in second grade, they were all reading a book, and I couldn't read the book, and I went up to them at recess, and they were like, "You're not smart enough to be our friends anymore."
This is like Stephen King's Carrie.
Uh-huh.
Did you, like, psychically spill blood all over them?
I knew that no matter how awful school was, there was a world outside of school, and I just needed to find that world.
So I'm very happy I have Anna Koppelman with me. Anna, how's it going?
It's great.
Well, Anna, I've been reading your excellent posts on MTV.com, the Huffington Post. You even got reposted on Yale's website.
Mm-hmm.
You were covering TEDx Teen in London. You're all over the place representing, I feel, not only Generation Z, but you also have these really beautiful posts about dyslexia and overcoming bullying. And you even had this one organization for a while, Birthday Fairies, where you did like all these birthday parties for children in need. And by the way, Mindy Kaling has even written, one of my favorite comedians and actors, is even tweeted about your writing. So I wanted you to come on almost selfishly because I wanted to learn basically, what is Gen Z? Like, what do you do? What are you up to? And B, I wanted to understand dyslexia and bullying and in general, how overcoming sort of bad things at an early age could help later. So, and that was your very first post I read, was one on dyslexia and bullying.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I'm very excited to be here and explain Generation Z and all those other things too.
Well, so tell me about dyslexia. Like, cause nobody in my family has it. I never encountered it. When I was a kid, if somebody had dyslexia, we would just basically make fun of them and throw them out of the class. Like, there was no such thing as dyslexia.
So I realized I was dyslexic when I was in first grade. I kind of knew that I wasn't the same as the other kids in my class before that, but I already knew that, like, they were able to do things I couldn't do. They could look at a page and the letters would make sense in their mind and it would transform into a word. And for me, I was like not able to sound out the letter.
But I didn't understand that though. So they, like, let's say you're open up a book, and there's the word home, and they would say that means home. And would you think that they were somehow seeing the same things as you were, but interpreting it correctly and you couldn't interpret it? Or did you actually think they were seeing something different?
Well, I couldn't see that it said home. I would see that there was an H and an O and an M and an E, but it wouldn't combine in my mind. It would just stay like that. And then I'd try to sound it out and it still would just be so hard for it to make sense to me. And then there were other things too, like they could look at a board and copy down the words from the board onto a page. And when I looked at the board and I tried to copy it down, it was just impossible to be able to see, okay, there's an A here and let me put an A down here.
And well, why is it? Like, what would happen? You would see the A, why couldn't you write the A?
I didn't know. And it felt like this mysterious thing where I was just stupid and I couldn't do it and there was something wrong with me. And all I wanted to do was be able to read and I couldn't read. And so I thought that I was fooling everybody else around me because I would pretend that I could. And we would have books that we would read during, like, reading time. And I would pick them up. And, like, the books would be upside down. And then I would go to the teacher and be like, I finished this and I understand it. And they'd be like, well, what was it about? And I just would have to, like, make up a story. And they'd be like, why don't you go try read it again? So I just knew there was something wrong with me that I couldn't figure out. And then one day I was watching the children's show Arthur. And there was a kid on it. And it was, like, a moose. And he had dyslexia. And I turned to my parents and I was like, oh, I have dyslexia.
Why? Because what did this moose, how did he exhibit the dyslexia?
It was all just about the same feelings that I was feeling, where he was behind in his class, but he had all these great ideas he wanted to get out but couldn't, and the feeling of being trapped because there's something in your brain that's not processing, or it's processing different. And I just instantly knew, like, that's the same feeling I have all the time.
So what's happening in the brain? Like, what actually is the condition of dyslexia?
So there's nobody with dyslexia has the same exact dyslexia. It's mainly that what you're looking at, when you read, you're processing it in a different part of your brain than most people are processing it. And so I think it's most information, too. You process it differently. And it's not as clear of, like, a highway to understanding something. You kind of have to, like, build different roads in your head to connect things.
Because in part, like, for 2 million years, no mammals needed to read letters? So is it just sort of a crapshoot where what part of our brain we read from, and most people just kind of end up in the right spot, but you didn't?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. People didn't start knowing that dyslexia was a thing, like you said, until pretty recently. Like, there's been, in the past years, a lot more discovery into what it is and how it works with dyslexia and all different other learning disabilities or differences. So it's all just, yeah, I think you're processing it from a different part of your brain. And so
like you said, you thought at first, you thought you were just stupid or not as good as the other kids. Mm-hmm. Considering that you thought that about yourself, what did the other kids think about you?
They thought I was stupid too. That's one of the reasons I knew I was stupid. And I had a group of friends, and then one day in second grade, they were all reading a book, and I couldn't read the book, and I went up to them at recess, and they were like, "You're not smart enough to be our friends anymore."
And so you were almost like pushed out of the tribe. Like, were you on your own? Did you have any friends?
So then I didn't have any friends, and my mom was like, "I can read the book to you." And I went back to them, and I was like, "Well, my mom can read this book to me." And they were like, "That doesn't count. You're old enough now. You should be able to read yourself." Hmm. And from that moment on the playground, it always kind of felt like there were people who could do these things I couldn't do, and then there was me, and that was something that I was doing alone. And I couldn't read, and I had to figure that out alone, and I was just kind of isolated very early. And then I ended up switching schools and going to a school for kids with dyslexia for 2 years. And then that's when I learned how to read. But I didn't learn how to read till like the end of third grade.
Wow. So when you first read a book, what was that? What was the experience like?
Well, it happens slowly. So you first are reading letters and sentences and tons of word lists. And then suddenly there's like a book and you're able to read it. And I mean, it's just a feeling of finally being at a place of understanding. And I had wanted to be able to read for so long that after I could, it was all I did.
And so now, like, with all these years of practice since third grade, obviously, can you read a book pretty much as good as anyone else?
I'm like a pretty fast reader now. And I read more than I think most kids my age read, just because it was so hard for me to get that I was able, like, I had a want to do it more than anybody.
Well, I think this is a fundamental thing in that because you went through this stress, mm-hmm. it's almost like, you know, people who go through all these bad experiences can kind of handle stoically like other later bad experiences. Mm-hmm. Do you, for instance, of all the friends who called you stupid, how many of them have written like almost a dozen articles for MTV.com right now?
Well, that's the funny thing is I'm Facebook friends with a lot of them. And when they post pictures from parties, I still kind of wish that I was in their friend group. But I know that not being able to read and all the other things that happened in my life kind of got me to a place where I have more of an ability and belief in myself that if there's something that seems impossible or hard, that if I work enough, I can get it. And so I think that's a lot of the reason why I've been writing these articles and have done the things that I've done, just
I've seen kids, you know, write journal entries or write essays or write articles, whatever. But how did you then make the leap and say, okay, well, there's no reason why I can't be on, you know, the premier network for children, like, you know, MTV.com? Mm-hmm. Like, how did that happen?
So I started writing for the internet when I was in ninth grade. Ninth grade was really hard for me. I didn't have any friends. I was alone a lot of the time. I was eating lunch alone pretty much every day. And I was just in a really sad place. And the kids in my grade were really mean to me. And I just felt like there was no real happiness. But when I would sit down and eat lunch alone, I would start to write in my notebook or I'd write on my computer because it's humiliating to sit there without anything to do. So at least if I was writing, it seemed like I was preoccupied and that's why I was alone. And so then I started writing these articles, and a lot of them didn't have anything to do with what I was feeling. They were like about my favorite YouTuber or about just like random things. And then one day I just wrote this article about bullying because I felt like it had gotten to a point where I couldn't not write about it. And
what was that point? Like what triggered that point?
Well, it was an incident where I had that charity birthday fairies, and I was throwing parties for children in need, and I had been doing it since middle school, and this kid in my grade who was always really mean to me came up to me one day and was like, I really want to throw a bake sale for birthday fairies. And I believed him and I was like, that's so great. And he got these really popular seniors and juniors to say that they were also going to help throw the bake sale, and the day of the bake sale came and none of them baked anything and they all kind of just laughed. And then
this is like Stephen King's Carrie.
Uh-huh.
Did you like psychically spill blood all over them?
No, I kind of just sat there with like my tray of Rice Krispie treats and like cried. But
did they realize afterwards they did a bad thing?
I mean, he knew the entire time, I think.
Did your parents call his parents?
Well, that kid and I have had a very long history of my parents calling his parents and it getting worse. So I think at that point, I just called my brother and he was at college and I was just like on the phone with him crying. And my parent, I just ended up like walking home. And then I just kind of sat down and wrote that article.
So it's interesting though. I think a lot of writers get to this inflection point where they write for years and years about something, like, and it could all be interesting and you're building your skill and you're building your analytical skills. So you're writing, what's your favorite YouTuber and why? Mm-hmm. I've even written a whole bunch of articles about who my favorite YouTuber is and why, like 15 years ago or whenever YouTube started. And, but then at some point you reach an inflection where enough is enough and you feel it inside yourself where, okay, now I'm going to write about something that's a little risky and it's about me and people are going to actually look at me differently one way or the other, maybe poorly because mm-hmm. of what I'm about to say. Like, were you nervous at all? Or did you feel that moment like, okay, this is coming from one layer deeper in me?
Well, I wasn't even aware that people were going to view it negatively. I wasn't really thinking at that point what people were going to think of that article. I just knew that I couldn't not say it. And I think I had this feeling at school and just in my life of not being able to connect with people. And just this, like I was saying, a feeling of isolation since like first grade of there's something between me and other people. Like
more than the dyslexia?
More than the dyslexia. Just like there was saran wrap between me and the rest of the world. And
why do you think that was? I'm sorry I interrupt so much.
I'm a
perennial interrupter as any guest will tell you.
I think it was because I'm kind of weird. When I was younger, I always thought people's parents were more interesting than them, and so I'd like to talk to their parents more than play. And then I liked to, you know, play pretend way too long. I played pretend until I was like 11. And finally somebody said to me, like, you're a little too old to be playing pretend. I believed in the tooth fairy till I was like in sixth grade. I when I was little, I had problems with my eyes. So I wore like an eye patch to school every day. There was just like always something a little bit weird about me.
Yeah. The eye patch kid would definitely be beaten up on the playground.
Yeah. The eye patch dyslexic kid, not, but you know, popular.
I feel like the world's a little different now. Like literally when I was a kid, nobody cared at all. Like we were on the playground and it was literally Lord of the Flies on the playground. Like kids would kill each other on the playground and whoever survived went back to the classrooms for the afternoon and the dead bodies would be carted off to the morgue or whatever. And parents didn't even know my parents, I don't even think they knew my name until I graduated college. Like parents like didn't care at all.
Right.
They were at work and then they would drink themselves to sleep and we were just on our own, just like clawing at each other. So parents are much more involved now in the whole, and teachers are much more aware of bullying. Bullying is like a thing now.
Mm-hmm.
And so why wasn't nobody kind of helping you unwrap that saran wrap?
Well, my parents are very involved, very great parents, and you know my parents.
Yes.
And so they were always there helping me. My mom would pick me up from school every day and we'd like get ice cream and talk about it. And my parents were like my best and only friends with my brother. But at a certain point, there's nothing you can really do about kids being mean. Like, kids will be mean no matter what.
And right,
that's
figure out the
human
loophole.
Nature. Yeah. And so teachers definitely knew that I was being bullied. And I had some teachers who were always really great to me. Teachers would eat lunch with me. They'd like offer to help me. They'd talk to me about it. But at the end of the day, like, you're not going to be able to stop people from being people. And that just kind of continued throughout a lot of my adolescence. And I do think that the bullying did make it where I was really close with some teachers. Like, my advisor at school and I are really close because when I was in ninth grade, I was always crying in her office. So I think that teachers are aware and they try to help, but you can't always help all of that.
So we've talked about two, like, kind of horrible things. One is dyslexia is obviously this very debilitating and awful condition. You couldn't read till a certain point. You thought you were stupid. Other people thought you were stupid. And then kind of this introversion that you had that separated you out from your friends in such a way that, combined with other things like being the eye patch girl and all that kind of stuff, people bullied you. And yet in both times, you mentioned positive outcomes that came out of it.
Yeah.
You became a more voracious reader than all of these supposed smart little kids. And you became resilient. You built great relationships with these adults, these teachers in your
right.
life. And then you started pouring your soul out to such an extent that Mindy Kaling, one of the, you know, most interesting, funny writers mm-hmm. out there, loves your writing.
Yeah.
And you're on MTV and all these things.
So that's what happened is, when I wrote that bullying article, I just felt there was like such a layer between me and everybody else, and I just wanted to connect with people. And when I would write, I would be able to connect with people. When I would perform poetry, I would be able to connect with people.
What do you mean perform poetry?
I was also doing, like, I also do slam poetry. So when I would go on stage and like share my poetry with people, I'd be able to connect with an audience. So I knew when I wrote, I was able to form connections with people.
Oh, okay, so where would you go to perform slam poetry? Because this is another thing, like, who would get, like, instead of just going to school with the eye patch, you decided, okay, after school, I'm going to go to someplace downtown and perform mm-hmm. in front of an audience. Like, what got you to do that?
Well, I just always felt like, and I think it was because of my parents and people around me, but I knew that no matter how awful school was, there was a world outside of school, and I just needed to find that world. And I felt like, okay, well, if it's hard for me to connect with people at school, like, what if I'm able to figure out another way for me to do that? If it's hard for me to talk to people because I get nervous when I talk, like, maybe I should try doing improv, because then I'll have to talk on stage. Maybe if I
did you take improv classes?
Yeah, I've taken a ton of improv classes. And then I thought, you know, if it's hard for me to share my feelings with people, what if I try doing poetry and then share it with a whole group of people? And each time I did that, I got to this point where I was like, you know what? I have this feeling and this sadness inside me. What if I just wrote about it? And it wasn't, I don't know if I really thought it through this methodically, but I was just like, what if I wrote about it and see who can connect with it? And I wrote that bullying article, and I sent it to the editor at HuffPost Teen, and they were publishing my other articles about like my favorite YouTuber and things like that. And the editor, Taylor Truden, wrote back to me, and she was like, this is a beautiful piece. A, are you sure you want to publish it? Because then it's going to be out in the world. And also, no one should have to eat lunch alone. Why don't you come eat lunch with me one day?
Oh, that's really sweet. Let's stop to take a quick break. We'll be right back. So a couple of interesting things there. One is, by the way, the bullying article is very beautiful, not because it's about bullying, which is, of course, a very moving topic anyway, but there's many articles and posts about mm-hmm. bullying. But I thought what showed skill was it wasn't like a revenge article. Like,
right.
you weren't like saying these people were mean to me and they deserve to die. Like,
right.
you were, it was about you and your own kind of inner reactions to bullying and how you were trying to confront it, just like you were describing just now. Like, every time you kind of reached a negative situation, you would look for, even though you felt the sadness of it, like you would cry in your teacher's offices or whatever, you would also try to find the way out. Like, okay, there's this world outside of school, so I'm going to take improv classes, perform on a stage, connect. If I couldn't connect with my friends at school, I'm going to connect with an audience. And I see many adults who don't have that realization. Like, I was just talking to a friend of mine who's having problems at his work, and I said to him, you can't outsource all of your self-esteem to your colleagues at work, because that's a very tiny world and there's a much bigger world out there. Like, do you think, I sort of feel what you just said applies to life in general. We're in some institutional setting more or less most of the day. So whether it's a school or a job or our peers or the government or whatever, but if we're having a horrible time, it's good to remind ourselves, well, there's a much bigger world, and let's try to find the variety in it where we can potentially flourish. I think that one thing right there could be applied to anything in life.
And I think that's something that my generation, Generation Z, does more than other generations, just because we're born in this time where we have the ability to connect with billions of people over the internet, and it almost makes it where there's no real excuse not to search for something outside of
that. That's really interesting, because not only, I mean, obviously right now we're all in that world, mm-hmm. but you only had that world.
Yeah.
Like, I grew up in a world where you had to put your finger on like the one and turn it all the way around the phone, and the phone was like bolted into the wall and you couldn't move too far away from it. And that and then I could only connect with one friend, and he usually lived like next door, and we would call each other up. But now you have friends, like I've seen in some of your articles, you would talk to people in other continents and mm-hmm. states, and everybody would be talking about their problems, and you're really connecting with people. It's a global friendship network. And people always say, oh, kids should get off social media. I don't believe that at all. And you're kind of a great example where social media sort of showed you that there is a much bigger world out there.
Yeah. And I think a lot of parents feel like you should only be watching 1 hour of television. You shouldn't be going online. Like you said, people think, oh, well, cyberbullying's this big issue, so we just shouldn't have teenagers online. And for me, that's hard to understand that thought process, because yes, people can be mean online, but people are mean in real life. And online, you can also find like so many nice people and so many friendships. Like you were saying, I have so many internet friends. There's a whole network of other people who are in their high school and they're feeling lonely. And social media is a way where you are able to connect with them, and then you're able to make them happier and they're able to make you happier. And I think that it's hard for other people to understand that, because people will be nostalgic for their childhood and be like, well, we were playing outside and we were having all these great times playing outside. But I question, A, how great playing outside was, but also it's not that different than playing online, because you're making friends with the people on your street, but I'm able to make friends with people on a much wider way.
Well, I'll play devil's advocate for 1 second. Is it... The people playing in the street are actually getting more sun and more exercise.
Very true.
And there's endorphins from that. So mm-hmm. there's dopamine from online. So that's kind of this one sort of neurochemical for happiness. You get online and you connect with people and it feels good, like socially. Mm-hmm. But you're running around and playing and getting dirty, there's an endorphins, which is another kind of play, like a runner's high type of pleasure. So right. you miss out on that if all you do is online.
Well, yeah, everybody should definitely exercise to some extent to get endorphins. And every other benefit of sunlight and things like that. But I think when we're in this world, there's more opportunity online. And I mean, I don't spend my entire life online. It's not like I'm spending 7 hours every night on social media. But I do think that there's a healthy balance where you're able to go online. And for instance, with my articles, if I was just writing them and keeping them to myself, I wouldn't have been able to, I think, get the feeling of satisfaction that I get, and also help people with what I write.
So far, I think I'm learning like several things that are very interesting. One is having kind of these early issues, like dyslexia is not your fault, obviously, mm-hmm. but having these early issues forced you to take this attitude where, okay, things could be sad and hard and I'm still going to cry, but I'm also going to look for there's positives. I've seen now evidence again and again that there are positives to all of these negatives. The second thing is there's this extra oomph that you do. Like, you don't just write an article. You contact the editor of the HuffPost Teen and say, can I publish my articles? So what makes you think you could take that leap? Like, some people don't take that leap, whether they're old or young. Mm-hmm. Many people say, oh, well, no, they'll never publish me. Like, what made you take that leap?
So I have a few things to that. The first is that Taylor, who used to be the editor at HuffPost Teen and now is the editor at MTV that I write for, she once said to me, and the advice she gave me was, she said, whenever people send her bios, they will put like, aspiring writer or aspiring dancer. And she always deletes that word because she says the only difference between you and somebody who actually is a writer is that you put aspiring in your bio. And so I think that that works for a lot of things in life where if you're scared to do something, you might as well do it because if you fail, then you fail, but you could also succeed. And the only difference between you and people who succeed is they take that chance.
And so you took that chance and obviously it worked out. But then also the other thing you did was it helped you realize there's this much bigger world out there because there's all the people who are reading you all of a sudden. And then there's all these groups online, maybe for people who feel socially isolated or maybe for people who are interested in
writing
insects or whatever. Insects. There's groups for everything. So you're able to kind of attach to those groups. And suddenly now, instead of being pushed out of the herd, you realize, oh, there's another group here where I fit in very well and I'm part of and I could feel good about and trust and they trust me and so on.
And that's totally true. But I would also like to say that I still cry in school and I still don't like going to school. And
why don't you quit school?
Because I want to go to college and I'm not really allowed to quit school. I always say that I want to, and I always am like, this is my last year of high school. I'm going to drop out of school. And then,
why do you want to go to college? You're already a good writer. You're already going on stage in front of people. You're already doing amazing things.
I like learning and I want to learn more. And I also want to be in an environment where I'm able to make friends and have a social life and just have an experience of college. I mean, that's a good question. Why am I still in school? And I think that also has to do with what I write about is being in school. And I think that being in school at the end of the day, it's hard and unfun, but it's important.
So tell me about, so I want to know now about Gen Z, which by the way, initially I kind of confused Gen Z with millennials, but millennials are already adults. They were kind of like coming of age in 2000. That's why they're millennials. So you're post-millennial. You're the next generation, which is just as big and just as important. And you're the first generation to completely grow up in high-speed internet. Like you can't even imagine what it's like to not have internet or to have low-speed internet. Like imagine if you were downloading a song and it would take an hour. Which is the very first time I downloaded a song. I downloaded like a U2 song and it took about an hour to download. So what social networks do you use? Where do you find people? Do you use Facebook even? Like my kids don't use Facebook.
I love Facebook. I love Twitter. I deleted my Instagram.
Because, really? You deleted your Instagram? I thought Gen Z uses Instagram all the time.
Most Gen Z uses a ton of Instagram. I'm a little too insecure for Instagram, I think. I just was constantly looking at other people and feeling bad about myself, so I deleted Instagram. But
that's very kind of sophisticated, though, to say, okay, I'm feeling bad about myself, so I'm going to stop this behavior, as opposed to trying to keep reworking the behavior until you feel good about yourself.
Oh, I did that too, but it's been enough years where I'm like, okay, this doesn't make me feel good. But I love Twitter and I love Facebook. On Facebook, I'm in some groups of like other writers and other people doing cool things. And on Twitter, you can connect with anybody.
And so with Facebook, I find Facebook groups actually to be really useful. Like I've met friends on Facebook groups and I think they're kind of underrated. Like people don't realize this is sort of the secret weapon of Facebook.
Yeah.
And on Instagram, there's no groups. It's just all everybody's liking everybody else's stuff. So there is this kind of mindlessness to it. But there's this weird thing where, oh, somebody liked me again. Oh, someone liked me again and again and again. It's like popcorn popping. So you feel all this like rush from that, which is why I think a lot of kids like Instagram, because there's very few other things that they get that kind of immediate feedback from. But I guess the same could be said for Twitter or Facebook. So what about like Snapchat?
I love Snapchat. Snapchat is like one of my favorite things. I don't think of it as social media for some reason, just because it's so one-on-one and it doesn't feel like...
So you're not broadcasting on Snapchat?
On Snapchat, it's more like you're talking to people. Snapchat's what I feel like my generation uses to flirt and then like Instagram, Facebook, Twitter is what people use to connect.
So connect and to broadcast.
Yeah.
So like, here's what I'm doing today. That's a broadcast. Connecting is like on the groups and the message board threads and so on. And Snapchat is, oh, I'm going to send my friend a photo of what I'm doing now or whatever. Do you send more photos or texts on Snapchat?
a mixture of both, because it all disappears, so you're able to say anything and send anything.
And do companies use Snapchat? I mean, I don't know anything about Snapchat.
Well, Snapchat has like Snapchat Discover, where you can read different articles and people will post like ads for things. It's like a very interesting app because it has like multiple different things going on within it. And then you have Snapchat Stories, where I guess you're broadcasting to anybody that follows you on Snapchat what you're doing. But it's different because you're not able to like things.
And so what other media? What are the social media?
That's kind of it for me. I'm not as good at social media as I want to be. But Twitter's my favorite. And Twitter's like, Mindy Kaling was able to, I was able to connect with Mindy Kaling on Twitter. Things like that, which I don't know if that happens on other social medias as much.
And do you use Twitter to engage in discussions, or do you use it also for news discovery or things like that?
I use it for a mixture of things, mostly procrastinating from homework. But
I do that too.
Yeah. I use it to send out my articles, and then also to like find other things to read and to see what other people are doing. And also, I just follow a lot of funny people on Twitter, so it makes me laugh.
So I also think fiction oriented towards Gen Z is in many ways outstripping fiction geared towards adults. So, I mean, basically Hunger Games came out of Gen Z fiction, Divergent, all of John Green's books came out of, you know, it was initially aimed towards your generation, I imagine. What are your favorite authors in this space?
I love John Green. Sarah Dessen is amazing too.
I don't know her.
She's been writing YA books for like 20 years, and she just writes these like really fun love stories almost, where she is able to take a character. I relate to a lot of the characters in her books because they usually start out as like somebody who's feeling lonely, and then they find a group of friends and they find a boy and they like live happily ever after. But she's great. John Green's great. I like The Hunger Games and Divergent a lot too. I mostly have been reading books that aren't as much YA. I like to read books that are more like for, I guess, your generation or adults too.
My old generation.
Yeah.
What books?
I'm trying to think what I was just reading. I was reading a book by, I don't know why I'm forgetting it now, but
I forget. Yeah. I forget what I'm reading all the time.
I'll remember it eventually. My other favorite YA book is Perks of Being a Wallflower. My all-time favorite book is like more of an adult book by Tim O'Brien, which is The Things They Carried.
Oh my God, that's like one of my all-time favorite books. It's a collection of stories that are interconnected, and the title story being The Things They Carried, a beautiful book about Vietnam.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that story is like one of the best stories of all time.
It's a beautiful book that walks the line between like fiction and memoir and what that means.
Yeah, it's totally autobiographical, particularly that story. But he does it in this fictional way. That's interesting.
Yeah.
And what about TV shows? What do you like? I'm doing the full anthropological survey of your generation.
I love The Mindy Project, Nashville, How I Met Your Mother, which is no longer on, but I love rewatching that. Shows like that, Modern Family.
So these are all broadcast shows. Do your parents let you watch cable shows?
Yeah.
Like, are there any cable shows you like?
I mean, I watch shows mostly on the internet. Like, I watch them on, like, Hulu and Netflix, so I'm not really sure what a cable show is. But
I see. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So I kind of always have a feel for what's cable and what's broadcast. Mm-hmm. Because I grew up in that bifurcated world.
Yeah.
But I realize I also just watch things mostly on the internet and don't know what networks they come from, but I can still tell.
Really?
So, yeah.
Interesting.
Just because the cable will be a little more edgy and risky. So, so it's interesting. So what other Gen Z things? I feel like with Gen Z, you guys are taking more initiative to get out there because you're networking and you're more confident about that you could spread your tentacles through the world. And everyone else is kind of like, or at least, I don't want to damn my whole generation because it's not true, but a lot of people I know are afraid to break out of the environment. They invested 20 years into their one place where they work, so that's where they try to succeed, as opposed to saying there's this much bigger world out there. I think that seems like the main difference, is this understanding that there's this much bigger world you can participate in, not just observe, but participate in.
Yeah, Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that because we were born at this time, we don't know a world where it's not like that. And, you know, for me, I'm still so young that I don't know if I'm going to end up getting stuck doing the same thing for 20 years. Like, we don't know enough about my generation yet to know, like, will that change just because we have the internet? Because it's still, like, switching what you're focusing on and what you're putting effort into is still a big deal whether or not you're on Twitter.
What do you want to do? Do you know?
That's a good question because
you don't have to know, by the way. I didn't know.
Well, I write so much that it makes sense for me just to continue being a writer, but maybe I'll switch careers or switch what I like doing.
Yeah, of course. You'll do it many times.
Yeah, that's kind of why I want to go to college, is so I can study other things. I really like psychology, but I feel like at the end of the day, I'll end up just writing.
Well, Anna Koppelman, I highly recommend everybody read all of your posts on mtv.com. They're
Thank
beautiful.
You.
You know what you should do? You should compile them all into a little booklet or a bigger book and self-publish them on Amazon.
That's a really good idea. That would be awesome.
And there's nothing wrong with the very first technique. Here's what you should do. Mm-hmm. You should print them all up and staple them together. And
right.
So then you actually can look and see, wow, this is a physical object of my writing, and it looks like a book. And so then you get this sense, that this visceral sense, like you could pick it up and hold it. You get this visceral sense, this is a book I'm holding of all my words. And then write an intro and an outro, and now you really have a book. And then rewrite all the stories so it flows together more. And now, by the way, you have a novel or a collection of stories or
That's
a memoir
awesome.
Or
That's
a book.
That's a really good idea. I'll do that.
I think you should. And congratulations on everything. You really are so impressive.
Thank you. You've
taught me some valuable lessons here. So thanks once again for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
For more from James, check out the James Altucher Show on the Choose Yourself Network at jamesaltucher.com and get yourself on the free insiders list today.
Hey, thanks for listening. If you want to make sure you never miss an episode, and we have some great episodes coming up, subscribe to The James Altucher Show on iTunes or Stitcher. If you subscribe, you'll never miss an episode, and I have a lot of great interviews coming up. Just go to iTunes, search for The James Altucher Show, and click subscribe. Again, thank you so much. I really hope you do this.